Hey, hi. Get ready for this goddamn podcast, yo.
Yeah.
We're going to drop this bomb on you. That's a goddamn podcast. It's crazy, yo.
Truth.
I don't know why I'm talking like that, but what I do want to talk to you about real quick before this podcast starts is Wolf Nation. W-U-L-F Nation. Wake up, live free.
Oh, awesome gear, men, women, children, animals.
They have men, women, children, and animals.
Yes.
For sale.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it. I brought two women last week. The cops.
Yep. No one wants to know about your personal life. But if you do like Wolf Nation, Wolf Nation is an apparel company for women, men, and children. Huh. You can't go like Wolf Nation, women, and children, and animals. Do you not understand how that sounds creepy?
Well, no, but I've been told.
Anyway, Wolf Nation, we are so proud to have them as our primary sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
They're killing it right now. They're getting it out there, getting the word around, and T-shirts are up. So Valentine's Day is over. Christmas is over. But look, birthday, Mother's Day.
St. Patrick's
Day. Arbor Day. St. Patrick's Day. July 4th. Mm-hmm. Get your Wolf Nation gear right now.
National Pancake Day.
Listen, wolfing it. Tired of living for the man, tired of being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Show that same ideology by getting Wolf Nation clothing. WolfNation.com.
Go there.
Enjoy the podcast, people.
Yeah. Hey, this is Zoltan Ishvan. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
And we are back. Yes, yes, yes. Michael Berlew, welcome back yet again.
Thank you.
We are slowly ascending to episode 100.
Oh, man. Has time flown? This little podcast that could is still going.
Yeah. Many people are like, damn it. Yeah. Is the 100th one the last one? But, yeah, I think about having 100 episodes. All episodes an hour plus.
Mm-hmm.
That's like 100 hours, probably closer to like 150 hours, maybe 125 hours, something like that.
That's straight talk
of talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is how many days is that? So 72 is 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
96 is 4 days. It's over.
Well,
it's probably equivalent to like 5-6 days worth of my life talking into this microphone.
72 times 2 is 144. So
right
there. I mean. Easily, almost a week's worth of talking.
Isn't that crazy? A week spent of my life talking into this microphone here. Mm. Almost half, more than half of it with you.
Aw.
This is gross.
I got a tear in my eye.
So if you're interested, please send us an email for secondmike@verbalshenaniganspodcast.com. New host.
What's going on over there?
Oh, nothing. I just figured...
Don't turn off my earphones. Wait a
minute. I figure 100 and out, you know? 100 and then...
Well, if that's the case, I came in episode 25, so you owe me 25.
Were you 25? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get technical, 26 was when, lack of a better term, co-host. 25, I was technically a guest with Doug Max.
So we've done, like, 70 of these together?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, reunited and it feels
that's
so
great.
Good.
70 hours for 4 listeners. No, no, we love you all. We're not looking for new listeners.
Hey, Dom.
Hey, Dom. We love all of you. All of Dom loves all. All right.
Somewhere he's in the car rolling down the windows. They're talking about me again.
So I am. Very happy to be back. Very happy to be back, as always. We just came off our President's Day special.
Yeah.
The almost 3-hour episode. it was a marathon, but it was a good marathon. You got a little bit of everything there. You got some shout-out people. You got some discussion between us, and then you had Zoltan, who hopefully will get back. If you haven't listened, go back and listen to the President's Day special. And
it's amazing how they have a new party right now, and when I put up the episode in different transhumanist groups,
yep.
It's just like any other political party.
Yep.
It's like, that's not my person.
Not my
I
leader.
Didn't nominate him. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, what? Has there been like a big fight for this title? Did he hold back somebody?
I don't know. I have no idea. But that was a really cool interview.
Yeah, no.
We're actually going to jump right into it today.
All right, man.
We have I guess you could say loaded show. We should have three people coming on tonight, three separate people. Again, don't worry. It's not going to be 3 hours. But the first guy we should have coming on, a pretty inspirational story. Backstory, I was watching, I think it was like CBS or NBC or one of those.
Just keep naming the network so I can tweet them.
hey
NBC. Animal Planet.
And I came across like one of those 60 Minutes type shows or... Hmm. And at the end of it was this this piece on this guy named Trevor Thomas. And he's a guy who unfortunately lost his sight but continues to hike like all these trails and has done over like 20,000 miles hiking with him and his dog. It was like really inspirational. And
what's up with all of our runners and stuff where they're bringing their dogs? These poor animals, man. They think, oh, God, thank God I was in the pound. I was so alone. Now I have a loving family. Then all of a sudden it's like, I got to hike 50 miles a day?
Yeah.
I'm a chihuahua, damn it.
Obi would last about half a day, and that would be the end of him. So I immediately reached out to him. I went online, tried to look for his page, and I did find him, and he got back to me pretty quickly. So we're going to give Trevor Thomas a call right now.
Mm-hmm. So.
Hello, this is Trevor.
Hey, Trevor, this is Scott Brennan from Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
I'm doing all right. How are you? This is my co-host here, Michael Berlew.
Evening, sir.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Doing great, my man.
All right. So Trevor, I was just talking right before we called you, how I saw a piece on you on TV, and how that's what caused me to reach out to you. I found your story, one, very inspirational, and two, pretty unbelievable. So I'm not sure which show that was. You know, you were at the end of a show. You were talking about you and your dog.
I feel kind of fortunate. We've gotten a lot of press recently. So probably the most recent one you would have seen would have been on NBC Nightly News.
Yeah, oh, okay. That was it.
Okay.
Yes. So I reached out to you, and you got back to me pretty quickly, and we're very happy to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me, man.
I'm just glad I'm finally in the same conversation as Tom Brokaw.
Tom Brokaw?
Yeah.
Actually, Lester Holt.
Oh, yeah. They changed him around? No.
Yeah, I think years ago.
Yeah, I just remember people from the 80s. That's about it. So what was Alf like?
So, Trevor, I mean, I guess let's start at the beginning. You know, on your website, you claim that you were... you were kind of into kind of extreme activities early on, biking, skydiving, racing. Tell us about your childhood and upbringing first.
Pretty much, yeah, I've been into, I guess, high adrenaline sports since as long as I can remember. Started skiing at the age of 3. Mom and dad took me to ski resort, put me at the top of the hill, gave me a push on the way down, and I caught the bug there. So took everything to the, I guess, natural extreme.
Was skydiving the same thing at 5 years old? There you go, son.
See you at the bottom.
Stuck with skiing for a while. Got into backcountry skiing, out-of-bounds skiing, then moved into skydiving, did downhill mountain biking. Then for quite a while, racing Porsches was my passion. And...
Well, how does one get into just racing Porsches? Do you need to own one, or is it like a school or something like that you go to?
No, you have to own one.
Oh.
So I was pretty lucky. My sister and her husband at the time were They were into racing. They were into racing Porsches. I was doing other types of racing. I was doing SCCA, doing like Integras and some of the Japanese cars. And of course, at that time of my life, couldn't afford a Porsche. So I graduated from college, and my sister invited me to a race and gave me the keys to my new 911.
Wow,
and very nice.
That got me a ticket to the game. So I took it and just loved it.
I'm still waiting for my sister to do that for me.
I'm wondering, where is the Hyundai Elantra racing series?
I got a pretty good sister, so yeah.
So you're into all these sports and whatnot, and then when 2005 comes along, what happened?
Pretty much the bottom dropped out of my world. Went to the eye doctor thinking that I needed glasses. I mean, everybody in my family has glasses, contacts, things like that. So
your vision was blurry at the time, or?
Yeah, started to get the halo effect around lights, you know, driving at night. And noticed I was reading the typical, well, got to hold the book a little bit closer and got to have good lighting. And I figured I'd dodge the bullet long enough, you know, just subject to the family curse. And went in, and the optometrist, very nice lady, took one look in my eyes and said, "I can't help you. You need to see a specialist." Mm-hmm. And she was so concerned that she left the office, went and made some phone calls, and I was in a specialist's office the very next day. And had started about, I would say, right around a year's worth of hell for me. No matter what they did, they finally gave me a diagnosis to what I had, but my disease was incurable. And over a period of a little bit less than a year, I went from thinking I needed glasses to I was blind.
Wow.
And along with that, a whole litany of new problems come. You know, I had to, in the prime of my life, sit down and learn how to read again, learn how to write, how to send an email. Even mundane things I never even thought of, like, how do you match your socks as a blind person? How do you do laundry? And then the real realization kicked me in the teeth, which was there's an 80% unemployment rate for blind people in the country.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, my God, I've always been a very independent person. And I was like, how the hell am I going to make a living? How am I going to support myself? Am I going to be a burden on my family? Am I going to be a ward of the state? I just had no idea. And so with that, you get really, really angry and you get really, really depressed. And suffered through that for about 3 months. And then finally, you know, you get to, just like anybody with any other problems, you have to make a decision. And my decision was, if I was going to continue living the way I was with no hope, no prospects, anything like that, I was going to die. And the other thing was disregard what everybody else is telling me and just start living life. So
what was it that you were actually diagnosed with?
I have what's called atypical central serous choroid retinopathy. In layman's terms, what they told me is that for reasons unbeknownst to medical science, my autoimmune system woke up one day and targeted the maculas in my eye, which if your eye is a camera, maculas are the film.
Right.
And attacked them and killed them. But anytime they give you a diagnosis and they put atypical in front of it, what it really means is they're not sure. They didn't actually really know. So the only thing they could tell me is that you will be blind. Couldn't tell me how long it would take, but they basically said, get ready for a new life.
Wow.
And at the time when this was happening, were you living by yourself? Did you have to make arrangements to start working on the inevitable?
Well, the plan was to practice law. And I got, I was actually visiting my parents at the time. I was between jobs, making, you know, getting ready to make a change. And then that's, you know, a change was made for me. So I ended up, and you know your life isn't going well when you're 35. And I lived at my parents' house for about the first year and a half while I was figuring out how to be a blind person.
Right.
And yes, you sit around and you do a lot of thinking, wondering, you know, what did I do? so bad in life that
to deserve it.
You know, that this was my payback.
Hmm. So, obviously, that's you know, none of us can imagine going through something like that. But you said after about 3 months, you made a decision, basically. To really, I guess, to learn how to live with it and I guess, find, I guess, new outlets, correct?
Yeah. I luckily, a friend of mine said, hey, why don't you, you know, you need to get some of your independence back, because I was to the point where I wouldn't leave my house. You know, I was fearful that I would get lost. I was fearful that I would get hurt when I would even do something as mundane as go and check the mail. So, friend said, try hiking. He said, it's safe, you know, at least if you fall down and you're on a trail, you know, you're not going to get run over by a car. You know, you don't have to worry about doing in-town navigation type things. And for me, it was like, seriously, hiking? You know, I did that when I was sighted, and I just didn't get it. You know, I said, there's really no excitement there. But it was something. So, I started it, and I was self-taught because my instructors for orientation and mobility, the people that teach you how to get around being blind, wouldn't tell me how to do it. They said, blind people don't do that. It's a little bit too dangerous. We don't recommend it. And then there was, you know, you have a cathartic moment in your life. And mine was at the outdoor store. I learned that I couldn't use my cane on a trail, because it kept getting stuck in rocks and roots, and I kept breaking them. So I went down and looked for some trekking poles and figured they won't break quite as easily, and I get two of them, so if I break one, then I'll still have an extra one. And there was a kid at the outdoor store that just would not stop talking about this great adventure he'd been on. He was in the woods for 6 months. He nearly froze to death, you know, had encounters with bears, and obviously, that caught my attention. I'm like, wow, that sounds pretty scary. What the hell were you doing? And the dude said, I thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. Something clicked in my mind. And before I left the store, I said, that's it. That's the vehicle that I'm going to use. If I can just figure out to do what this kid did, then I'll get my life back, and I'll be able to do whatever it is that I want to set, what I set my mind to.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I said, and that started my career as a long-distance hiker. I literally said, okay, I have nothing to lose. If I fail, the worst thing that happens is I could die. And that was okay with me. But, I'm success.
Now, when you were leading up to this, what were your plans? Did you do, like, little short trails? Did you just jump head in first? What was your plan for getting through this?
Well, I found out that there was no gear that was made for a blind person, so had to figure out even how to use the simplest things, such as a tent that I could physically put together myself. I had to find a stove that I wouldn't blow myself up with or burn the forest down. And I started hiking nonstop. You know, we have a greenway system in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I am, so every day, all day long, I would hike and I would hone my skills. And then a few times I went out and I would do overnights that were actually on the AT so I could get a feel for what it was. But predominantly, I just packed my stuff and went like 99% of the rest of the people that attempt that trail. Packed my stuff and I went to Springer Mountain and said, I'm going to Maine.
Now, I had a lot of questions. Now, as you're getting ready for this and as you are, you do become blind, is it we hear all the time, like, do all the other senses become heightened? And, because how are you going from, you know, not being able to see to being able to hike a trail and know where you're going, what's in front of you, if you're going in the right direction? Give us a little insight on that, because that to me is amazing.
Well, your number one is a misconception of the sighted world, and it was mine as well.
Right.
You do not, when you lose a sense, you do not get super senses for the rest
right.
of them. you do pay attention to them more. So they are, so you are more sensitive to the input that you have from them. And what, you know, what I did is, luckily I chose I chose wisely on my first trail. So I went solo on the Appalachian Trail. It is the most widely traveled footpath in the world. It is almost impossible to hike 100% by yourself the entire distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I did rely on other people a lot. I simply took it day by day. I would memorize one day's worth of trail. I went from shelter location to shelter location, about 12-mile chunk. And I learned to feel the trail with my feet, and I could find rocks and roots with my trekking pole. And while I was out there, the one thing that I learned that I was doing, and this is what some people have said, yes, you have super senses and things like that, but I developed a skill called echolocation.
Yes, I've seen some, not only just you, but I've seen a couple other people on videos and whatnot, and it's it. I think a podcast that I listened to, Invisibilia by NPR, did a whole piece about like echolocation, and it's just unbelievable to, you know, to someone who is doesn't. I can't even imagine it, but it could definitely explain like how you figured that out and how you learned that and what goes into that.
Well, I can't really tell you how I learned it because I didn't go to school. I think it was, you know, I think it was a matter of I was in an environment where I was forced to rely so heavily on my hearing to identify things that would cause me harm, anything from predators to falling off a cliff, that I just became very in tune with my hearing and used that as, you know, as a method to perceive my environment. And over, you know, over 6 months out in the backcountry, I became very, very good at it.
And so, is this the same way I've seen, like, where you use the clicking noises?
That's one way to do it. There are actually two schools. One is, that's called active. I do that in an environment that, say, it's loud, where I need to really focus on an individual thing and really want to identify it. Then there's passive, and that's what I do predominantly. I take the sounds from the environment, because in the backcountry and in town, there's plenty of ambient noise, so I don't really have to, I don't have to rely on a clicking to be able to get my personal picture of the environment.
Fascinating. When you were talking about getting help and doing this, being an independent person, were there certain things you said, I got to do this on my own, I don't want any help, versus stuff where you would talk to somebody about where am I going or what should I do here or anything like that?
Well, when I first started out there, obviously, you know, there wasn't any gear made for me, but there also weren't any maps, there weren't any guidebooks, nothing like that designed for a blind person. So the only, I did what I could. And the best I could do was memorize a day's worth of trail, to know where the water sources were, to know the basic overall terrain. And that's one thing that haunted me when I got off the AC, because I set out to be 100% fully independent. And in reality, I relied on a lot of other people. So that's what, I guess, was the catalyst for me to continue hiking. I wanted to ultimately be able to find out a way that I could take the human factor out of the equation and be able to plan my own trek, be able to plan my own route.
Right.
And I wanted to do it on the trails that were technical, and I wanted to do it on the trails where I didn't care if there was anybody else on it or not.
No.
So it's been 8 years to actually get to the level where I can confidently go out and do that.
Wow. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, Trevor, tell, like, there's got to be a lot of trial and error and injuries and falls and things like that. Did you ever suffer any major injuries or, like, going out by yourself? Or
I've done a lot of suffering, whether it be I've had a lot of injuries. Luckily, as time has gone on, my injury count has dropped dramatically. But on the AT, I'm actually pretty fortunate that it didn't kill me. My injury count was high, the number of falls I took was astronomical, but I ended up with everything from multiple broken bones. Broke four bones in my rib, two bones in my left foot. Still got a nagging hip injury from where I broke my iliac crest that haunts me today. I've cracked my skull. I've dislocated joints, things like that. I've gotten giardia from bad water sources. So, but it was a learning experience for me. Every time I reinforced something I did poorly that involved pain, I learned don't do that again.
Jeez. Now tell us about Tennille.
Tennille she's been my guide and my hiking partner for the last 3 years. I got to the point in 2011 where I believe my career had plateaued. I'd hiked nearly 14,000 miles on most of America's most demanding trail.
Wow. That's
it? I'd hiked every way known to man. I hiked solo on the trails that were well-traveled. I hiked with a team on the lesser-traveled trails that were technical, all of which to hone my skills. I hiked with friends. I hiked with partners. But still, the ever elusive going out and doing it myself had evaded me. So technology had caught up, and I had figured out a way to use an iPhone, which mine is accessible. It talks. Figured out a way to get guidebook directions put on my iPhone so I could refer back to it. I got very, very good at keeping track of my cadence and my time, which would give me distance. My echolocation was very, very good, so I could perceive my environment. But I still wanted to be able to do what I do and be able to do it quickly. So I figured a guide dog would be perfect. I just get one, had it trained to do backcountry work, and then, problem solved. I would be able to achieve my goal. I found out very quickly that that's not the case. Number one, there's never been a guide dog up until now that's ever been trained to do what's called Ubuntu work, and that's work in the city like you would normally see a guide dog, and then specialized work in the backcountry. Most dogs are trained to stop every time a surface changes, from a curb to, say, asphalt.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
If there's an obstruction that's 4 inches tall, they're going to stop. So if I had a dog that couldn't have been trained, I'd never get anywhere.
Because jeez,
we'd still be hiking on our first mile. There are so many things that I needed her to disregard. So we developed a way. First of all, we found the smartest, most athletic dog on the planet. And we developed a way to make her ignore everything she needs to do in town and teach her a whole new bag of backcountry skills. Jeez. That she would just... And she does things like everything from finding signs. If I need, if I get close to something, say I know something's 3 miles away. When I get to about 2¾ miles in my head, I start paying really close attention. And I tell her, hey, we got to find a sign. And she won't find me exactly the sign that I want. She will find me every sign, and then it's up to me to pick something to do with it.
So really?
That's
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's truly a team effort. And she cut down my fall ratio because I started to learn that she'll take the path of least resistance. So say, for instance, I'm in a scree field. If I just put my feet where her feet are, I'm not going to fall as much. So that was really great. She's also, she's going to be out there for self-preservation. So she, over the years, has started to identify things that consistently she knows will hurt me. And she'll ignore things that she knows that I don't have any problems with. She watches out for cliffs in case I'm not paying attention, things like that. So I'm able to do everything that I want to do, and with her help, I can also do it and do it in a time fashion that I can actually complete a trail.
Now, what kind of harness are you connected with, Tennille, when you're doing these hikes?
Well, that's the thing that I don't use the standard harness that we would use in town, because when you put your harness on your dog, it tells them it's time to go to work. So I have to put on a backpack, and I use about a six foot length of climbing rope, and that is her lead. It's attached to the center of her back, much like where her harness would be attached, and I can feel everything she's trying to tell me through the tension that we have on the lead.
It really is unbelievable. Now, so about how many miles have you and the dog done together?
Well, we've done 5 through hikes. We've done 6,000 miles. And, yeah, we've done that all in a little bit less than 4 years.
Now, when you you get back, like, home and whatnot, get people with, like, service dogs a lot of times. Like, is there a pet owner relationship? Is it fun, or is it all, like, kind of straight business with her?
Oh, no. No, she's my guide. She's my hiking partner, but she's also my best friend.
That's awesome.
We play. I mean, you've got to have a good fun relationship with your dog, or else they're not going to work for you. I love my dog, and I know the feeling is reciprocal.
Yeah, I have a very overweight half English bulldog that has probably hiked about 6 miles.
Yeah.
Total. But he's I know the feeling. It's just complete companionship, but
he'll guide you to the food cupboard.
Yeah, he'll guide you to the cheese stash. but I know the feeling of companionship. But you're just hearing your story takes it to a whole, different level that, we often completely take for granted. It really is amazing.
Yeah, she's actually, our relationship has become so in tune that she started to sense when I get stressed, and she will diffuse the situation. And she's also to the point where she's actively anticipating my needs. She is trying to solve the problems that she thinks I need to have solved before I actually ask her what to do.
What's the biggest challenges when you do these? Is it going uphill or downhill? Is it certain weather that's extra dangerous or complicated dealing with the service dog in the trails?
Weather is always an issue. Weather can take a perfectly nice section of trail and turn things into a nightmare for you. We just got the last trek we did in Colorado was at high altitude. So we go to extreme altitudes, and that was uncharted territory for us. Nobody could tell me how a dog would perform at 13, 14, 15,000 feet. So that is, that is also a problem. Then there's always the biggest concern that I think that I always have is that as accurate as my directions are, because we take every guidebook, every manual, every data book that's ever been made, and we write a guidebook specifically for me before I go out. But the trails are always moving. There are reroutes that are not going to make it into publication. Right. So running into a section of trail where they've rerouted it and my directions are not matching what the trail is actually doing for a blind person is probably the most dangerous thing that you could ever encounter.
Yeah.
Because you've walked off the map and you have no idea when you're going to be getting back on.
That's amazing. Now, Trevor, your story is obviously inspirational to a lot of people. And I see that you do, you've done a lot of motivational speaking and things like that. Now, how do you make a living and what do you do from day to day when you're not hiking?
Well, I feel pretty fortunate. I am a sponsored athlete. So
that's awesome.
I have some very, very good sponsors that, pay me to be able to do what I do. I have a source of income that comes from my motivational speaking. And hopefully, right now I'm in the process of writing my book. Hopefully that's going to be another source of income from us if more than one person other outside of my family wants to purchase it and read my book.
It is great. What would you say, I guess, you know, you have gone through, obviously, you know, something that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy, but you've made the absolute best, and if not more, than anyone can ever imagine. So, like, when you do this motivational speaking and not only, like, just talking to us or talking to the news or whoever, what is, like, the kind of message you're trying to tell people?
Well, I want people to hopefully take away from what we've done and to know that pretty much anything is possible if you put your mind to it. And I want people to walk away knowing and being inspired enough to step outside their own personal comfort zone. And I don't care what it is. Whatever that you personally deem has been unachievable for you, I want you to go out and try it. And just by doing that, you're going to be able to push the barriers of what you know is possible, and it's going to make you a better person. And it's going to make, you know, ultimately, it's going to make the world a better place.
What's the next goals for you? Is there another adventure you're thinking about? Is it a certain part of the world? What is the next driving goal that you want to conquer?
Oh, there are more, luckily for us, there are more trails and more mountains than we'll ever be able to climb and hike in our lifetime. We always have our sights set on new challenges. And we always like to do ones that have elements that are going to push our limits and, you know, push my limits as a hiker. Maybe an environment I haven't been to before, certain aspects of a trail that would be unfamiliar, so I can push my skills. Right now we're looking at, this July, we're going to go back to Colorado and we're going to do the east-west, the collegiate mountain range. We're going to do the east-west route in there and we're going to bag all the 14ers along the way.
Nice.
After we leave there, we're going to go and we're going to make the first solo summit attempt of Mount Whitney by a blind person. And that's the tallest mountain in the contiguous United States.
Yes. Mm. Wow.
And we're going to follow that with, we're going to do the first solo through hike of the John Muir Trail by a blind person.
That's a really unbelievable, Trevor.
It's an accomplishment for me to go up the stairs to the third floor in my building. So. his is a tad better of a story.
Yeah. Trevor, your story is absolutely phenomenal, and I really want to thank you for giving us a few minutes and giving us an insight to your story. If people want to check you out or communicate with you, or maybe they heard this podcast or see more, where can they go?
They can go to the good old internet and go to our website, which is blindhikertrevorthomas.com. I also have multiple Facebook pages. One is Trevor Thomas, a.k.a. 0/0. And I also have Trevor Thomas Blind Hiker. And the other thing I'd love people to check out is I have a foundation that I've And, you know, my goal for my foundation is to give the experiences that have changed my life in the backcountry, give those to the next generation of the blind. So all they have to do is simply go to farsightfoundation.org or Team Farsight Foundation Incorporated on Facebook and check that out, because my kids are doing some amazing things.
That's amazing, Trevor. Again, when the book you're writing, is there any release date or estimated time, or is it just kind of still in the works?
Actually, I'm leaving that up to my agent and the publishers that we're talking to, but hopefully my goal is for 2017.
Excellent. Okay. We will look out for that, and when it comes out, we'll surely promote it on our end. Thank you so much for coming on, and wish you best of luck on all the crazy things you got going on next. We'll be checking in again.
Oh, definitely. Thank you very much. And I have one quick question for you guys.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Elton, I'd love to share the link to this.
Yep.
and to what you guys are doing with our fans and followers. Could you send me the link to the show?
100%. It'll be up on Monday. I'll have the link already. I'll send it to you. And if you could post it and whatnot, that definitely just helps the both of us. And
awesome.
We'd love to, you know, share it with anybody.
Oh, I was about to say, I thought this was a private podcast. I was just going to take it home for myself.
Oh, we're actually not recording.
Hey, there you go.
Trevor, thank you so much, man. I'll have it to you on Monday, and I'd love to talk to you again, maybe like down the line when you accomplish your next feat.
Well, get in touch with me in about mid-August.
We will.
Then,
certainly.
Yeah.
We'd love to check in from time to time.
Definitely. While we're on trail, we post daily to Facebook. So
awesome.
So you can track.
All right. We will be in touch, man. Take care. All right.
Thanks, Trevor.
All right, man. Thanks. Bye-bye.
It's a pleasure.
You know, it's just things like that just put so many things in perspective. You know,
yeah.
Like when you're complaining about... I don't
spilling
feel like
my coffee.
I spilling my coffee. You know, I don't want to work today. I'm not going to the gym today. You know, I'm tired.
Your favorite one, oh God, Burlew showed up.
Well, that's that's the hardest disability there is. Yeah.
There's no dog that can help you with that, my man.
Speaking of disability.
Mm-hmm.
First off, that, like I said, that is something that makes you, you know, the human spirit or like the things that people can accomplish is ridiculous. You know, yeah. It's like, and it makes me like so mad sometimes about what I think is tough or what I don't do. I'm like, why? You know, I could be hiking that many miles and doing things like that, and I have all my abilities. You know,
exactly.
This guy's crushing it. Like, doing it's amazing. By far inspirational.
I mean, it's amazing to fathom when you see like some rock ranges, like, oh, I can't handle that. This guy is working with no eyesight, working with a dog that's trained, but obviously with any new trail, you hope everything is to the training and, you know, just going on luck and knowing that he can take a step and he can fall down and he could have some sort of injury, you know?
That's what I'm saying. The danger is always there, you know, always, always, always there. Real quick before we move on, speaking of disability, I was hosting trivia. You got to visit me hosting trivia last night.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Always a fun time. Mm. It really is. I do have fun doing it. I don't even do it for the money. It's kind of more like... It's some mic time, and believe it or not, when I'm doing the trivia with stand-up in mind and radio in mind, I actually sometimes practice on my pronunciation of words. Like, I will try to read the question, like, really clear and, like, try to be, like, I don't know, work on, like, cadence and stuff like that. It's just, like, something stupid I try to do that no one else would ever notice.
Yeah, it's professionalism to be precise, so that way when you tell a joke, somebody's like, well, what did he say?
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
Like, or, like, maybe just the practice will all sound better on here, so when my jokes bomb, at least they sound good.
Yeah, that's what I like, when you tell a question, I love how you slip in a dick joke in between.
Yeah.
The 13th president of the world had a big cock. Who was he?
Hoo-ah! So there was a question last night. It was basically this dolphin-like fish from Hawaii. Translation, the word translated means strong in Hawaii. Now, I get all the answers. I gather the answers from nine teams. There was nine teams there last night at Paragon Tap and Table. And eight teams put mahi-mahi.
Well, what'd that other team do?
One team, being your team, a very small team, okay, and you happen to be the guy who dropped the answer off, put ahi, ahi.
Yeah.
A-H-I.
I was in the ballpark. I never, like... read it out loud or wrote it down on a piece of paper. I mean, when you first read the question, I'm like, okay, what could it be? And then just how it translates to the same word twice, I'm like, I've heard that before. Apparently, I never heard it with the letter M in front
of
it.
Like tears in my eyes because I'm picturing you going, I got this. 8 points. Ahi, ahi. And of course, like my new thing is if someone gives me like a ridiculous answer or something's way off, I like to read it out loud and kind of get the room like laughing. And,
yeah.
I'm getting better at it. Each week I'm finding new things, having fun with the people. And, so, of course, I had to call you out. I'm like, well, one team wrote ahi, ahi. And I'm like, it's my buddy Mike over there.
Yeah. I'm like, hi, everybody.
That was the best. down where I grew up, we ate ahi, ahi every day.
Yeah, that's a southern what is that, goldfish? Or
we ate ahi ahi right out of the river. You can scoop the ahi ahi.
Oh, it just flew through the Alabama rivers, the ahi ahi, man.
Down in New Egypt, New Jersey, you can just scoop the ahi ahi running through.
So fresh, man. I mean, so crisp the taste of the ahi, and then you get the boldness of the other ahi.
That was sewage runoff, Berlu.
Oh. That's why Mom didn't want me swimming in there.
You know how you know how your dad said he ate the first nectarine or clementine? Yeah. You ate the first ahi.
It runs in the family, man. We're pioneers.
Oh, I love it.
On a side note, you probably shouldn't have given us the points because I was thinking of ahi tuna when I said ahi ahi.
Well, I gave you the points. Ahi ahi. We know the name of this episode.
It was good enough for fifth place. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Let's keep this moving. Let's keep this moving. I got a couple things to talk about, but I want to check in with my favorite.
Me?
LGBT director.
Okay, it's not me.
This is his third time on the show. Mr. AJ Mattioli, who's going to check in with us, hopefully, if he picks up.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.
How are you guys doing today?
We are doing phenomenal. We just got off the phone with... What a freaking inspirational story. The guy, he went blind at 35, and now he's hiked over 20,000 miles with his dog. He does all these hikes solo. It's just unbelievable.
It's amazing. I have a hard time walking to the gym sometimes.
That's what we said. It puts things in perspective. You know, I'm complaining. We're complaining about our work day. We got to get up, prepare. This guy lost his sight at 35 and has now hiked like over the world. Now inspirational speaker. He has a foundation where he's helping all blind people like come out and have new experiences. It's just phenomenal. Phenomenal. So I'm in a good mood.
That's amazing.
Great mood. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing really well. Really well. Nothing too crazy yet. Well, as far as the testosterone goes, right now...
Let's give our listeners a... Like, you know, because we have so many listeners.
You do.
But we gotta backtrack a little bit. AJ has been on. This is your third time now.
Yes, it is.
One was our real interview where we really got to know each other. We broke bread and we hit it off. But you are... You're going through a transition, and I contacted you about a month or two ago, and I said it'd be really cool every couple weeks if we check in with you, and you're going to give us like a little, you know, what it's like emotionally, physically, maybe even financially, like what's going on, and we'd also like to know what's going on in the world of Mattioli Productions too. So,
it's definitely an interesting process. Right now, the biggest thing that's happening with the hormones is I'm starting to smell really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the club.
Yes, welcome. Yeah. Welcome aboard.
Now we can accept you.
Welcome aboard.
It is.
You stinky bastard, you.
It's so gross. It's just disgusting.
I smell something nasty in there. AJ's around.
Like apologizing to people on the street.
I'm sorry. You're walking. Terrible. You're doing that thing where you like hold your arms real tight against your body. I did that basically from 6th to 9th grade. So
excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's happening. Other than that, I will say I've been able to lose a little bit of weight, and I think that's because of the testosterone kind of it'll redistribute the weight in my body.
Right.
So, and through that, you know, it kind of makes my shape change a little bit. And then I have been going to the gym a little bit. And
I was just saying, at this point with the testosterone, you should be like squatting like 400 pounds by now.
Oh, I'm like telling the gym bunnies to hand me the 300 pound weight. Yeah. So I'm like, come on.
You guys know which, you know where the sun is. Is it this way or is it that way or ooh?
So that's happening, which is great. You know, I definitely feel like, when you go to the gym, you know, with testosterone, the results are a lot faster, which is very nice. You know, you see the changes a lot faster. You know, and that's the biggest, you know, it's the biggest hurdle to get over when you're working out is you're not seeing anything. So
of course.
Now I'm actually seeing things and I'm like, okay, this is great. So that's, you know,
positives.
Really exciting. You know, I can't, the world doesn't need another fat straight man, you know what I mean?
So. That's my job.
We got it covered.
Well, that's important, so thank you guys for covering that.
Oh, thank you for backhandedly insulting us.
Yeah, you know, I am part of the gay community, and we do backhand insult a lot.
Yeah, so. Man, I heard you backdoor insult a lot. Oh!
Oh, no, you did it.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
You did
he
it.
He can take it, but he can give it back. Oh!
Ooh.
I know, I'm horrendous. I'm horrendous.
And then other than that, you know, I get this shot every 2 weeks. The shot hurts.
Where do you get it? Where do you get it?
The testosterone definitely hurts.
Where do you take it?
You know, it goes into my thigh. And every 2 weeks, it changes the thigh that they're putting in, so it doesn't get, you know, all too sore and all that stuff. But
so, how many have you had now? Three or four?
I'm actually up to my. Yesterday was my fifth.
Jeez, wow. We haven't checked in.
Yeah. Next time we call in, I've been a guy for like 7 months, guys. What the hell?
I have a full beard. Where have you guys been?
I'm touring with ZZ Top.
So are you seeing, other than the body changes, are you seeing any other physical changes, like appearance-wise or not?
I mean, right now, you know, like I was saying, like I feel like my hips are getting smaller, which is nice. But the things I really want to happen, like my voice, I have a very high voice, you know, so I'm excited for that to change. You know, but pretty much what I'm working on right now is focusing on working out my my chest area. This way, the more muscle you have in your where your pecs are and your chest is, when I finally get top surgery and I get my boobies taken off, you know, it's nice to then they can put the scars of where they do the cut. Where my pecs will be. So the more muscle you have underneath your boobs before you get the surgery, the
more
likely...
You're going to be Schwarzenegger before you know it.
Exactly.
Now, what are they going to do with them boobs when they let them go? I mean, is they going to keep them in a mason jar or something like that?
I'm hoping they can go to a flat-chested girl. I mean, honestly.
What about, like, someone who has, like, suffered from breast cancer? Is that possible?
Well, I mean, I see girls on the subway all the time, and I'm like, oh, if I could just give you these.
That's a weird way to introduce yourself, by the way.
But seriously, can they do a boob transplant?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why they haven't thought of that yet. I know they don't do it, but I'm like,
that'd be great, like,
right?
You know,
why not?
To give it to some, like, a woman who's had like a mastectomy or something like that, and that'd be amazing.
I mean, I don't understand, you know, like why, you know. Just female to male and male to female, transitioning people aren't just swapping parts.
like one of those one of those chop shops outside of City Field.
Like here's some boobs. I'll take balls. It's perfect.
Well, I don't know. I just saw the other day online that you could donate a testicle for $35,000. I'm thinking one's not bad.
Go old John Kruk on everybody.
Center, you're fine.
I'll tell you, that'll get rid of the Discover bill, and I'll have a little extra.
You just see some guy on the street with like a coat and all. What do you got? What do you got? I got some testicles. I got some boobies. What the hell do you want, man?
You got nuts. You got boobs. You got ass. You got calves.
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who's got a very large cock.
Now, AJ, any negative feelings? How about like emotional feeling? Any like crazy? I don't know. Overheating, sweating. Other than your terrible smell.
Other than my disgusting armpits. as of right now, luckily, I haven't had any crazy like roid rage, and that's what they kind of tell you to watch out for.
Really?
And luckily, like I've, you know, because my friends would definitely tell me if I was increasing in my douchebaggery. And no one has mentioned it.
Is that a scientific term, by the way?
By the way, Scott, your douchebaggery has been going up about 20% the last few weeks. I'm just putting it out there.
It's science.
There's like an index to look at, and no, you're within the norm.
So you're weight class. You're in the norm.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you're about 235. That's like a 7.2 douche level.
That means like one snarky remark like every hour. You're good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But yeah, other than that, nothing crazy's happening. You know, but some people, you know, tell me that nothing happened for like 3 months, and then all of a sudden it was just like an onslaught of changes.
Okay.
So it really is an individual kind of thing.
Well, that's why this whole thing's going to be fascinating, as long as you keep answering my Skype calls. And if you don't, I'll just find your voicemail anyway.
I answered it on the first try.
You did
time.
It. You did it. Usually it's like, hello, about 10 minutes.
I had it ready. I had my Skype open. I was ready for
You're champ today. You're champ. You get a gold star.
We're all professionals today.
So, I mean, that's really great. We are, of course, happy for you. Real quick, we got two things for you. What's going on? First off, I see you posting some new things about words. You know, we got to support our favorite LGBT director. So tell us what's going
on. Thank you. Well, words right now is we just hired a final editor, which is great. He should have it done within a month and a half.
Real quick, for new listeners, tell them what words is.
A distribution agreement with Shammy Media.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Yeah, distributed within the next couple of months, and it'll be out there. So
real quick, tell anyone who's never listened to this what words is.
Words is a documentary of exploring identity within the ever-changing landscape of New York City. And we interview some amazing people that are New York celebrities, such as a few drag queens, Bob the Drag Queen, who's going to be on RuPaul's Drag Race Season 8 coming up in a couple of weeks. So his interview was, I interviewed him because he's a New York legend, and then we find out he's on RuPaul's Drag Race. So
that's awesome.
That doesn't hurt the the promotion of the film, that's for sure.
Yes.
And then we have some, like, David Eppolito, who I know you guys
have
seen in the past.
I got to meet Bill Nye through him.
What happened?
I said I got to meet Bill Nye through him. That was like
you would tell.
That was like a childhood, like, achievement unlocked, you know.
It's like a video game. You hold up a trophy. Yeah. Boo, 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 boo.
The Nye badge. Yeah, so go ahead.
And, you know, and just an onslaught of New York celebrities.
Hey, is Joanne in that film?
Joanne Phelan?
Yes.
Yeah, Joanne Phelan's in it. She's fantastic.
She's great. She's wonderful. She's a great comic and a great person.
I went down to the Broadway Comedy Club and saw a set a couple of days ago, actually.
Oh, thanks a lot for coming to all my shows that I post.
Hey, man, you just have to tag me.
I'm just kidding.
Tag me in those flyers, son.
But speaking of drag queens, we need to get my co-host here in drag, and we're trying to plan something for March, and I can't. We can't seem to get it locked down.
Did Marty Gold Cummings?
No.
Okay, I will get on that one.
Yeah,
make sure that this happens.
Listen, we want the only thing we need is we need a little area where it's going to be quiet for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
whether
gonna make that
so whether that's prior to the show or after the show, we just need to know that. Other than that, we are down and we're ready to go.
All right, I think you guys are gonna have a great time. Oh. So I'll make sure that happens.
All right, and before we let you go, Michael Berlo here as last time. Go ahead, Berlo.
I got five things here as you're transitioning over to men. You need to understand these because these are some of the things that men do that women do not understand. Number two on this list, adjust their balls in public.
Mm.
Yeah. Women are saying, are you just touching it or to make it sure it's still there? I mean, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you get a little itchy. I mean, they're balls. I mean, what can you do?
I mean, you're trapped down there. You know,
yeah.
Hey,
it's dark.
Hey.
They're scared.
You got 35 grand? I got one coming your way. You know what? Screw it. You give me 20 cash. It's yours.
I tried to sell my eggs because I was like, what the hell do I need eggs for?
Ooh.
And they were like, no, we're good.
They're like, well, they're not farm fresh.
Tell me about the mother. You really... funny story.
So here's the thing.
Let's see. Another one on the list. Give each other dumbass nicknames.
Oh.
Women apparently don't understand that. Is that right, Brendan Butter?
I was just going to say that. And me and my, as a suburban white guy, I naturally freestyle rapped in high school and college. And my nickname was Brennan Butters.
Oh, that's just
great. That's I know you're speechless. Mm-hmm. You know, Brennan Butters. You get it? Do you get it? Do you get it?
Yeah, it's gotten. Oh.
His sidekick was...
There's a guy named Fetty Wap. Brennan Butters ain't far off.
Wait, what was yours?
Brennan Butters.
No, the other...
Oh, Fetty Wap. You know, he's like this big celebrity now.
I love it.
And then the other guy I used to rap with, his name was Crispy Flo.
I thought his name was going to be Bill Pickles.
He's still saved in my phone as Crispy Flo. And he's like a suburban dad with two kids.
I know I'm on the clock, but I really got to take this. Crispy's on the phone. I can't let him wait.
I could vouch for. I might post that like with the in our like little description. I'll post a picture of my phone. Crispy's calling. All right, go ahead. Number three.
Next one on the list: act like babies when we're sick.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, when
I'm pretty bad. I definitely have that already. 100%.
I'm all right. I like run myself into the ground.
I'm all right, but when I'm like flat out, just hits the system. I gotta be a little bit.
This is coming from the guy who had a headache the other day at a podcast
uh-huh.
and walked around the entire event with an icy cold Coke can on his eye.
For the record, it was Code Red Mountain Dew. Totally different. Totally
different healing effects.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly.
All right, number four.
How about this one? How we idolize Bruce Willis.
It's true.
Guy's badass, man. Once you make Die Hard, you're a legend for life.
I heard he's like the biggest dick ever, too.
I've heard some of that, yeah. What was him in the Expendables where they pretty much said, screw you, we'll get somebody else?
I don't know. I know he's on a play like on Broadway right now, and apparently he's terrible.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard he's terrible.
How many people go to Broadway saying, what do I want? I'd like a little Bruce Willis in my musical. Didn't he have a band for a little bit there?
I don't follow that man. I'm more of a Stallone guy. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's see what else we got here. Why to skip foreplay? That's a man thing, apparently.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to throw it out there. I'm a big fan of foreplay.
Ditto.
Big fan.
Yeah, I mean, I guess an old time.
It's not even the time thing. I like to think of it as like...
the adventure.
You know, like stand-up comedy, I'm trying to get better all the time. I like to think of it as the open mic. You know?
I mean,
I'm working
like
on my material down there.
Like, is it because like men think women are going to like smarten up so they might as well like get it done as quick as possible?
I don't know. So- You're going to have to tell us too soon.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You figure it out.
You're going to be quizzed. I'm going to tell you. If you fail, we're going to send you right back to female.
She was faking that headache this morning.
AJ, thank you so much. You're the best, and we'll be in touch in another few weeks.
Definitely, buddies. I'll talk to you soon.
Take all care, right, AJ. Love you, brother. Right. Later.
Bye, guys.
Just the best. Just the
always
best.
Always fun.
Always fun.
Welcome to intermission.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I hate to interrupt you from this awesome podcast with 752 guests, but I want to tell you a little bit about the sponsors that make this podcast possible.
Yeah, please do, Scotty.
Well, first off, football's over.
Aw.
Look up. But NASCAR's coming.
Ooh.
But baseball's over.
Well,
but spring training's coming.
Yeah.
Basketball's over.
No, it's not.
Well, it was for me 10, 15 years ago when the Sonics moved out of Seattle.
Yep,
but
yep. Sixers was proud the same time, too.
No, I would say the Sixers were over the day the season started. But anyway, there's so many things to gamble on to make your daily fantasy teams,
hockey.
Daily fantasy sports, hockey, baseball, anything you want to do.
MLS is coming back.
Listen, go to DraftKings.com, enter the promo code Shenanigans to get 15% off right now. Beautiful. Hey, Berlu.
Yeah.
You saw Deadpool?
Yes, I did.
I liked it.
Very good.
I like movies.
Mm-hmm.
You like independent movies?
Of course.
That's what I like, too. That's why our good friend over at Convenient Truth, a great movie. It's a satirical kind of movie. It's a mockumentary, and I think you guys will love it. Now, listen, you want to support it? Go there right now. Enter the promo code Shenanigans, and you can get the whole goddamn thing, the bonus thing, for $6.49.
Oh, my God.
You spend that.
Yeah.
Put the Whopper down.
Exactly.
Put the one Whopper down.
Yeah.
It's
don't
okay.
Go for the double. Go for the single and get a great movie at a great price.
So visit Con Truth Movie, Contruth Movie.com. Enter the promo code Shenanigans. Finally, Mr. Ahi Ahi, I'd like to promote Trivia Revolution.
Woohoo!
Trivia Revolution. Trivia every day all over New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just in Clark where I host at Paragon Tap and Table. It's all over New Jersey where they combine craft beer and trivia together. Just say no to corporate beer.
Damn right.
Seriously, come on down. It's free. You win gift certificates, money, all different things. Come on down to Trivia Revolution and take on Michael Berlo and his team where they answer Ahi Ahi.
Hey, I'll break a pencil the next time you give me that kind of crap, okay?
Yeah, if the audience knew what you were talking about, that'd be good.
Oh, yeah, we should have talked about that
earlier. But we didn't.
Oh, yeah.
This is Michael Berlo. He's great.
Yeah, Trivia Revolution.
Enjoy the rest of the podcast, people. Let's keep this. I feel like I'm at I'm the host of a comedy show right now. Let's keep this train moving. Bring on the next. Put your hands together for. You've seen them in clubs and colleges all over New Jersey. Like, fuck you.
What? You mean unlike that other guy?
I hate when people ask me credit. That's the only reason I say host of Verbal Shenanigans, because otherwise it's just colleges and clubs.
That's the only thing to really promote. I mean. I can say, I was at the Stress Factory, but at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't matter if they're either going to laugh or not. They're not going to go, I'm going to give you a break because you were at the Stress
all
Factory.
All I want is them to pronounce my name correct. That's it. That's all I care about. Because if they do like you, they might say, hey, I can Facebook that guy or something like that. All right. Let's keep it moving. Carlo, very special guest coming on. Something that's near and dear to my heart that I could not live without.
Venereal diseases?
No. I think I could not live with beer. I think I could not live with, I don't know. I quit dip in the last couple months. But I could not quit coffee.
Okay.
Could never quit. How about you?
I've lowered my amount drastically. I will say that. I think I can go a few days, but I still would get that kind of caffeine withdrawal where it's like, all right, I got to go back.
Well, on the show today, okay, our third wonderful guest. Is this not a blind hiker, LGBT director, the director? Okay, we have a man named Kevin Sinnott coming on. Okay, now he is basically recognized as nationally as a coffee expert. Coffee expert. In fact, he just attended something called Coffee Con, which I want to talk to him about a little bit. So let's keep this rolling. This is a super guest show this time.
Yeah.
Let's get Kevin Sinnott on.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, is this Kevin Sinnott?
Yes, it is.
Did I say that correctly, Sinnott?
Sinnott would be the you know, how we pronounce it, but it's fine.
Oh.
Well, he's being very nice for you butchering his last name.
Well, and we were just talking about all I care about is that someone pronounces my name right. And then I butcher his name. Kevin Sinnott, welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Show. I'm Scott Brennan, and the other voice you hear is my co-host, Michael Berlew.
Evening, Kevin.
Hi, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how's it going? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear fine. Is this Scott?
Yes, this is Scott, and this is my co-host here, Mike.
Hey, Kev.
Hi, Mike. Is that better?
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, we were just, you know, it happens. We do a lot of these Skype things, and, you know, people are in different locations and all over the place. But, Kevin, we were just talking about, you know, there's a lot of things that I enjoy. You know, I enjoy beer, I enjoy different types of foods, but I think the one thing in my life that I could not give up would be coffee. You have seemed to have make a living from it. So
it does seem like that, doesn't it?
Well, it may seem, well, either way, you are known as, but you're basically known as a coffee expert, correct?
Yes, that's true.
Now, first off, what the hell goes into being a coffee expert?
Well, you have to, I think, first, I'll tell you what my path was, and maybe that'll explain
yeah,
it.
Yeah, go for it.
I actually was I've been a writer all my life, and I was a freelance writer. I was actually working for a man who was writing about nutrition, and he was a holistic health expert, and this would have been in the early 1990s, and he was at my residence meeting with me, and he got annoyed because I was taking 20 minutes or so to brew us a cup of coffee, and he said, maybe you should write about coffee, and he said it with a certain amount of irony, but a certain amount of irritation that let me know that it was not necessarily helping our a working relationship at the time to take all this time to make coffee. But it certainly, I think you have to get into coffee to the degree that, you know, you examine everything about it, and coffee is quite complex, and yes, not only complex in its flavor, but complex in all the steps it takes to really make it come out.
Now, are you equivalent to like a wine sommelier when it comes to coffee? Is it something where you can just take a sip and go, okay, that's from Colombia, from this farm, blah, blah, blah?
I'm probably pretty good in that regard, but frankly, the thing that I think is where I probably have excelled in a way that's a bit unique, because there are, frankly, a lot of people that are taste buds that have also been trained to detect certain qualities and flavors and tastes in coffee that are desirable and analyze them and figure that stuff out. But really, probably what's unique about me is I can take roasted beans and I can determine the best way to bring forth the flavors. Because in that regard, coffee is really different from, let's say, craft beer or wine, because both those products are really come ready to drink. I mean, if basically, and I certainly enjoy both of them, but beer and wine, it's a clean glass, and whatever the work that's been done has already been done for you. The sommelier would be someone who is great at analyzing those tastes and knows the right ones to recommend to people. And as I said, I probably have a better than average ability in that area. But what's unique about me is that I can brew to such a level, and I'm familiar with all the different brewing methods. I shouldn't say all. I'm enough of an expert to know no one can know them all, but I probably know a lot of them. And I really analyze it. I've written 2 books on coffee.
Yes,
and
I see that.
A lot of them are brewing.
Now, how did you get to this point where you became an expert? Like, was it just experimenting or visiting different places? And obviously, to write a book, it's got to become somewhat of a, like an obsession. Like, where did you start gaining this idea or getting better at this? Like, how did you go about that?
I live in Chicago, and Chicago has once a year an event called the International Houseware Show. It may seem an odd place. It's not truly a coffee show. I mean, it covers everything. I mean, there are vacuum cleaners at International Housewares.
So you're a vacuum cleaner expert too, then?
Oh, thank God.
No, I didn't have the interest in vacuum cleaners. but
that
I
job
did,
sucks.
I know you're
terrible joke. I know, terrible.
But I definitely had the interest in coffee brewing, and I would go up and ask these pork salespeople at these events all kinds of questions. I mean, I was like the proverbial, the total geek. And of course, they're salespeople, most of them. They're nice people, but they're making a living out of writing orders, not out of answering this character's questions. So I would, and of course, if someone from, let's say, Macy's showed up and they spotted that tag on them, they sure weren't going to, I'm sure they wondered how I snuck into the event or how I got my badge, but I was able to bluff my way into getting a media badge to go there. And I think deservedly. I think I've paid them back, by the way, many times. But I definitely would ask questions about brewing and brewers and how they achieved the temperature they did or what kind of mechanisms they did. I was always hoping to find an engineer who they brought to the show, not one of the salespeople, because generally the salespeople didn't know the answers to the questions I wanted to know. But it's sort of like being a hi-fi geek and wanting to know everything about how, you know, the loudspeaker works, the amplification works. And I got to the point where I was I started self-publishing a newsletter, and my newsletter got enough attention. The USA Today did a blurb on it, and then pretty much we had the bookstores at the time, or newsstands, put in orders for it. And mine was a publication they would put in an order for maybe one copy, two copies. It was perfect for me because the type of person that wanted to read what I was writing would see it, and they would be so afraid they would never see it again that they would just instantly buy anything that I wrote.
So
I had a pretty good sell-through.
You were that guy. Like, I worked at Best Buy for a while, and they stuck me in the computer department. And I knew, like, a lot about, like, movies and DVDs and CDs at the time, but they stuck me in the computer department. People would come up and be like, well, how does this compare to the blah, 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 blah? And I'd be like, I got to get my manager real quick.
It's good.
No, I know. At least you were honest. You know, I mean, the worst is, and believe me, I go to retail stores once in a while, and I ask people who work there, not just to be annoying. I'm always hoping I'll learn something, but I will tell you most of the time they haven't got a clue. And what also happens to me is I'll be in like a Best Buy, and somebody will be there to buy, replace a coffee maker, and I'll hear them. In fact, this happened to me at a Bed Bath & Beyond recently. They were in there looking for a replacement to their they had a Mr. Coffee that, you know, bit the dust, and they were looking to replace it. And they asked some, I thought, reasonable questions. The person had no idea how to answer them. And I just sort of walked up, and the salesperson begged off anyway, and I just started helping them. And, of course, my help wasn't perfect because I think they ended up having to leave Bed Bath & Beyond and order something online. But at least they got the coffee maker they wanted. And I'm happy to do that. I always see people. In fact, if I see people in a Target or something looking at two coffee makers, I'll just start the conversation just for fun.
Now, how long does it take to make a respectable cup of coffee? I'm guessing you're not a person who owns a Keurig at home.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do own one, but only because I wanted to try it, and I'm allowed 20 coffee makers in the kitchen as a maximum by my wife. It's a part of an agreement that we made with her therapist.
You brought in that 21st one day. She's like, no, I'm putting my foot down.
It's like, you and that coffee maker can stay outside.
Well, I definitely have a number. So I will purposely buy coffee makers occasionally. And if I don't buy them, that I just am curious about, not that I think they're promising, because I want to be fair. I mean, and once in a while, you know, I'd be happy to find a coffee maker under $100, for instance, that does a real great job at making coffee. It's possible, I suppose. I haven't usually found it, but once in a while I find one that's pretty good, that's inexpensive. So I was curious about the K-Cup. Frankly, the K-Cup, I'm going to defend it for a second. The K-Cup does a couple of things that were developed to fix problems that a lot of other coffee makers had, and I think they were successful. The problem is, at the end of the day, it's still not particularly fresh coffee. The cups are usually underfilled, and the machine does not do a great job at extraction. It under-extracts, which is maybe better than having over-extracted bitter coffee, but it's not right either. I mean, it's not. It's, let's put it this way. For the cost of a K-Cup, I could get some incredibly good coffee and make a cup of coffee that's memorable.
What is the Babe Ruth of coffee makers? What is, like, the best? What is the top? The one that is sitting in your kitchen right now that would blow my balls off?
I'll tell you, there's a couple of choices, and I'm gonna give you one that's really expensive choice.
All right, give us the Mount Rushmore, the top four.
Yeah, if you said I've got lots of money to spend, I don't necessarily want to learn that much, meaning I don't want to do things manually, but I'd really like a great tasting cup of coffee every time. I would recommend a machine called a Bun. It's made by a company called Bun, B-U-N-N, and it's a Trifecta. I don't think it's sold currently in any retail stores, but I think it's available online.
Okay.
And the Trifecta, I think it's a few hundred dollars. It's $300 or more. And it is incredible. And what it does is, it was designed by the company in the U.S. I think they're in Springfield, Illinois. And it just does a lot of things right. It gets a lot of piping hot. It only brews a small amount of coffee. So if you want multiple cups, you'd have to keep brewing with it. But it's also incredibly easy. And that's one thing I think is really important, because there are a lot of people that are wine connoisseurs or beer connoisseurs or coffee connoisseurs that don't necessarily want to take up the hobby of being interested in the hardware. So I think it does a great job. It's simple to use. It's easy to measure. I would always fresh grind the coffee, but you don't even need a particularly expensive coffee grinder, because it's really forgiving of the grind. Mm. And, you know, it does an incredibly great cup of coffee if you put good coffee into it. And that's what, I mean, you can't do any better than that. But, I mean, it is, no. You know, it's what
profit. So what are the other three?
Another one would be if you're willing to put a little more effort into it and not, is the Chemex. Chemex is not a new coffee maker. It's been around forever. It looks like a laboratory beaker, in effect, but that you put a paper filter into, but it just does such a great job. It's got ultra thick paper filters in it, so it's laboratory grade paper, and it does a wonderful job of holding back any bitterness. But you can brew an quite a strong cup of coffee, but one that is absolutely free of sediment and bitterness. And I think most people will be surprised. They would almost be surprised that it's a cup of coffee if they're used to using most automatic coffee drip coffee makers.
Right.
That would be another one. That's inexpensive. You can probably get a Chemex for, I think you can easily get one for under $100. Maybe
that's not
$50.
Bad. That's not bad. That'd be more in my kind of range. You have to
use the kettle to brew the water, boil the water.
Okay, give me one more.
Okay, an AeroPress. AeroPress is a little plastic. It's made by the company that makes Aerobi. It's like a boomerang, you know, that it's used. It's very got a real hip audience. But the AeroPress coffee maker is really ingenious. It's a little plastic tube. You can use it. There are actually I had a at a coffee event that I do for consumers, we had two classes in it. One showed you how to use the AeroPress as it's originally designed, and the other is what's called the inverted AeroPress. So you can use it kind of upside down. But it is
the old inverted AeroPress. The good old days.
I know, it sounds silly. It's simple to use, and yet And the most people who use it actually the water a little less hot, but man, is it rich? It just has a taste of, it calls to mind hot chocolate, and yet it's coffee. And a lot of people, once they use it, it becomes their coffee maker for life, and they end up throwing it in a backpack. You can travel with it. You can even be in a restaurant and just ask for some hot water. And I've actually seen people. I saw one person actually do it on an airplane once. They asked for hot water and they brewed it at their seat, and they had a number of people asking for little sips nearby. So
those flights, when you do that on those Middle Eastern flights, they don't work out too well.
Well, I certainly think. In fact, it's interesting you mentioned that there was a U.S. airline that apparently there was an incident on a plane where someone spilled and the water was hot, and I don't know. All it takes is one, right? One time, and they banned them. The Aeropress is actually banned on that airline.
Oh, wow.
So we are back up, Kevin. We are back up. All right. So Kevin, you obviously have mass experience, not only in just coffee, in the machines that make coffee. Now, there was something I wanted to ask you about. When I contacted you, you were like, yeah, I'm going to be out at CoffeeCon this week. You got to tell me about what CoffeeCon is. It sounds amazing. It sounds like heaven.
It is the coffee event. Well, the story of CoffeeCon is I live in a town just outside Chicago, and the town came to me and said, would you like to put a coffee event together? We have some extra money in the budget. We'd take a certain amount of money each year and invest in an event for the town. And I said, sure, I would do it. And then I thought about it. I think what they were thinking of is, you know, can you put together something with some folk music? And I like music. That's fine. And then have some coffee served there. Well, I kind of did it the reverse. I said to my wife, I'm only going to get one chance at this. I really need to do something that I've been sort of toying with for a long time, but I may have the opportunity. So I called up my friends at the very pinnacle of the coffee industry, and I asked them if they could. I brought in an expert on tasting coffee. This man buys a lot of really expensive beans, and he knows how to run a business into the ground, just like I have many times. I guess into the grounds, we would say, to use a coffee pun. But he definitely, I knew he would be great to show up and teach people how he tastes coffee. So I called him up and I asked him to show up. I asked another one who was an expert in brewing another type of method. I asked, in fact, several people who each had their favorite methods, would they come and teach it? Because people, coffee brewing has, as an art, has really been lost over the years. And I think that the average person, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the average person 100 years ago knew how to brew coffee. And it's a very important thing for them to learn because, again, that's their part. When you buy coffee, and 70% of the coffee in the U.S. is drunk at home. So let's figure out a way to teach people how to drink coffee, how to taste coffee, how to appreciate it like the experts do. Well, so I threw this, and all of a sudden I had about 1,000 people show up. So so many that we really outgrew the event space that I had, and the city decided not to do it. They did it a second year, and then the venue didn't want to do it anymore, and the city said, well, we'll do some other things. We tried it. And meanwhile, I said, well, I'm not done giving. I'm not going to give it up. So I took it on the road. I took one to into the city of Chicago proper. I took one to San Francisco, one to New York, and one to L.A., and I'm here in New York because we're going to do one in May. And it really involves people coming all day. They get to, and it's like a wine tasting in the sense, in that there are a dozen or more of their cities, their regions, top roasters who bring their coffees and craft brew them, meaning brew them like the manual coffee making all day long, while people just roam around and just try different coffees and get to compare them.
Sounds
meanwhile, we have
awesome.
Some treats for people to keep their, you know, so they're not just deluged with drinking coffee tastes all day. and we have other, and then meanwhile we have their on-site classes, which are hands-on, where if you want to walk up and try to learn to use Chemex, I think it's really hard to learn. I used to write instruction books, and I can tell you it's very hard to write an instruction book. It's very hard to follow instructions in a book. Whereas things, when you see someone do it and then you get to try your hand at it right away, they're not hard. And a lot of people tell me, oh, it's so hard to figure out how to make a siphon coffee, for instance, which is like a vacuum. It is very difficult to describe that to someone, and yet it's so incredibly easy to see it and then figure out how to do it. So we provide that, and we just had one in L.A., and we had 1,700 people show up, and they just they absolutely love it. Oh, we also do prize giveaways. I get the brewer manufacturers and the different people in the area to donate some prizes, and we kind of everyone gets a number, and it's a raffle, but it's really fun, and people get to some lucky people get to walk away with some merchandise that more than covers their ticket. So it's and I try to keep the prices low enough so that even the mom and pop roasters in the area, which are some of the most interesting ones, can afford to come in and be there, and keep the ticket prices low so the consumers can come there who even just maybe they have a K-cup and they just like coffee to drink coffee. I don't try to do a real snobbish thing. I mean, my idea is not to make people not enjoy coffee anymore. Like some people get to that point where they get so critical. I just try to make it the fun of coffee and the fun of the different flavors and the different ways to make it.
Now, when you guys do these weekends, do people even bother getting a hotel room, or they pretty much know they'll never get to sleep after they go through a day of drinking coffee?
Well, there's two things I've noticed. There's always a police sting about a block away because there's a lot of traffic tickets because they just are driving a little too fast if they leave. The second thing is, if they're pretty careful, and I always advise people, just have little sips each one. They'll all add up. You will have had your three or four cups of coffee by the time you leave. But the goal isn't to make you shaking. You know, the goal, to me, the caffeine is a side effect. It's not necessarily the effect I'm looking for. I would be dishonest if I said I don't really want any caffeine effect. But I would say it's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is just to, is a flavor explosion. Yes. And I can tell you, I've had enough people walk up to me and say, I have never tasted coffee like I just had over there, and point to someone. And they become a lifelong customer of that whatever company it is, whether they're a brewing manufacturer or a roaster. And meanwhile, they learn something. And the goal of CoffeeCon is when people wake up Sunday morning, because usually we hold it on a Saturday, they can make better coffee at home and enjoy it. Better. And
what you meant to say was when people go to sleep on Sunday morning.
that's true. They may, and yes, that's possible. I have to say that people always ask me too if I drink a lot of coffee. And the fact is, 20 minutes per. I use a lot of manual brewing methods, and I'm pretty analytical. While I'm doing it, I don't drink that much coffee. But I drink only fine coffee, and I found that when I brew it, I'm very careful. And when I taste it, I think the more you learn to appreciate coffee, you'll catch yourself. You don't have to try to do this. I'm just predicting that most people do it. I find they slow down when they drink coffee. So maybe they're getting a little less of the caffeine effect, but they're certainly achieving the complexity in a cup of coffee is technically more than in a glass of wine, because I'm talking about numerically, and there's a lot of flavors there. There's a lot of spices in a properly brewed cup of coffee. Very little bitterness. When people tell me they have bitter coffee at home, I generally ask them, "Are you grinding?" And if they say they are, I say, "You know what? Grind a notch coarser next time."
See, I like to brag when I grind. I gotta be honest. I like to brag when I'm grinding. I apologize.
You make it fine?
No, it's a little play on the word grinding I just did. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's okay. I understand.
Yeah.
It's Say it to me one more time, though. It's worth hearing.
No, I was just saying that I like to brag when I talk about my.
Pretty much. Now I've just heard it. Well, Mike, you're
on
Grindr. Before I did. Okay.
Yeah. All right, we're pushing against the clock here, Kevin.
Okay.
But I got a question for you. What is the best cheap everyday coffee in your opinion? Like
wow.
A Starbucks, a Dunkin', a McDonald's, a what's that one? The Tom
yeah.
something.
You know,
what's the best one?
Be
if you had to pick one.
Oh wow, that's a tough question. I used to like Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah!
I'm a McDonald's guy myself.
Mm. Well, let me tell you something. I was in a Target, in fact, about just before the holidays, and I picked up a sack of it, and it was probably nostalgia. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts would probably, and this is, you know, things that have aromas are incredibly good triggers for memory. So, you know, but I remember when I started dating my wife, we used to, sometimes you just go to a Dunkin' Donuts and have a cup of coffee, and I always enjoyed it. I have to tell you, though, I bought a sack of it, and man, it did not meet my memory. I know that they're no longer roasting. They used to roast locally. This is the problem with, you know, these companies.
Yeah.
They used to roast locally. They don't do that anymore. They roast, I think, in Canada. It's centralized, and then it's not as fresh. As far as I do like the basic flavor of it. I just didn't have a good sample of it.
What's the ideal, like time for a bean to be roasted then served? Like, what's the ideal like time period for a perfect
cup of coffee? That's a great question. And 2 weeks. So
2 weeks.
You don't have a very big window, do you? Think about a wine that you could put on a shelf for 2 weeks, and if someone doesn't buy it, it's technically not as good anymore.
Wow,
that's pretty. Yeah, I know. It's why I have a lot of admiration for roasters because. That's a tough business. I mean, you've got something with that kind of shelf life. Now, I will tell you that the major companies will claim that they use special packaging and that the coffee lasts. Well, this is where it gets interesting. All kinds of claims about it. I've heard everything from 3 months to a year. And it's not unusual to find major coffee companies putting out products that have a use-by date of a year out from when it was roasted. Now, I don't think there's any way that they have packaging that currently can preserve the flavor of coffee for a year. What it can do is it can protect it from oxygen. It can protect it from outside aromas getting in there and contaminating it. But that's different. There's still an aging process that goes on with coffee and a loss of aroma. And I think that that's, you know, so I would say, I know there are people in the industry who will say, oh, well, he's just a real purist. Well, I would say the outside of that would be a month. I mean, I would say after a month, you're going to get some serious degradation in coffee.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now, if I replace your regular coffee with Folgers crystals, what would I see happen?
I always found that there was a television commercial about that, and I always found it beyond belief, and I think other people in the coffee business would say that's pretty unlikely that anyone would be genuinely fooled by that. But you know, if someone likes it, that's fine. And I know people that will tell me, oh, I really like instant coffee, or their favorite coffee is a coffee that is highly flavored or something. And I'm like, you know, it's a free world. I mean, it should be, and I believe in that. So if you enjoy that, that's your privilege. I would say for me, Folgers crystals would not be on my top 10 list.
I'm gone. Lost that bet.
My go to like day to day one that I get the story is Green Mountain.
Hmm.
I was going to say for a major brand, and even though Green Mountain has to live forever with the guilt. I hope during Lent that they do some serious penance for the K-Cup. But actually, yes. Green Mountain is a capable roaster, and I would say that Green Mountain Coffee, there are some Green Mountain coffees that I think are pretty good. As far as a national chain, they have some pretty good go-to if you're looking for a go-to coffee.
All right. Yeah, that's all I'm looking. I'm just looking for a little validation. You know, I need some of it from somewhere in all aspects of my life. So
okay.
At least
I'm going to give you some.
All right,
Green
that's
Mountain,
all.
Pretty good.
All right. thank you. First off, so much for coming on the show. If people want to check you out and say hello or get more information, you got two books out there. You got a bunch of things going on. Where can they go?
Okay, there are two places that I kind of hang out online, and one of them is my own private blog, and it doesn't have any advertising or anything. I just review coffee makers and occasionally write about things that matter to me about coffee, and it's called coffeecompanion.com.
I'm on it right now, and I'm looking at your face.
Oh, that's me. And it was many years ago. I think it's pretty current. And then the other one.
How creepy of a statement was
coffee,
that by me?
Some coffee. Is coffee-con.com. Coffee-con.com. And that's about the event. And that event really is a personal extension for me of really what I create. You know what? Someone asked me to describe CoffeeCon, and I said, I created the event that I wanted to attend.
Yeah, you know
and
who
I would have
know
been
who
happy
asked
to
you
find
that?
It just existed. It didn't.
You know who asked you that? We did about 11 minutes ago.
Really? Did I? Was that my answer? Anyway,
I don't know.
How I created it.
That's great. And on Twitter, where are you at on Twitter?
Twitter, I'm a Coffee Kevin.
Coffee Kevin. That's how we got in touch with you. So, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on, and good luck with all your with the books and with the coffee adventures. And we'd love to check in with you, and you know, later in the year, and see where things are going. And this will be out on Monday. So,
terrific, Scott and Mike. It's been a pleasure talking to you. The only thing more pleasurable would be having a cup of coffee in person, and someday maybe we can do that.
Where are you located?
I'm in Chicago. Right now I'm in New York City, but I'll be in New York in Mega Coffee Con. Come on up and we'll...
Is May you have a Coffee Con in May in New York?
Yeah, May there will be a Coffee Con in New York. That's what I'm here right... I'm here right now actually scouting venues, because the venue that we currently had for last one isn't going to be big enough to hold the...
No, if we came out and did like a podcast with all different like coffee roasters and all the people there. We've done a few live events. We've done the beer one. Like we've done a brew fest where we've talked to every single brewer there, and we've done a food one and a bunch of different things. So the coffee one would be really interesting.
Oh, I think it would be a hoot, and I think you know it would be great for your audience and... what you guys are about, and the look and feel would fit perfectly with the tone of Coffee Con.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll be in touch, and thank you so much again, Kevin, all right? Take care.
Excellent. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Scott and Mike. Take care.
Have a good night, Kev.
Bye now.
Wow. Do we bring the random here at Verbal Shenanigans?
Yeah. We diversify.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. We diversify our stocks. Basically, anything's on the line.
Yeah.
Anything's on the line.
Also, like our stocks, we don't make any money out of this.
Like most stocks, we fail. We underachieve first quarter, second quarter, third, and fourth. Yeah. We are a failing stock. In fact, most people will call us a penny stock, but we enjoy
it. Who gave you the penny?
We enjoy it. We love what we do here.
Yeah, and it's always enjoyable.
You know what? I could talk. I saw Deadpool over the weekend.
It was a great movie.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was... different. I thought it was true to the character to a certain extent. I thought it was fun, and that was the main part. It was good.
They did it a lot better than him in Wolverine Origins.
Or Green Lantern.
But basically, the one thing that they love about the character, they sewed his mouth shut in Wolverine Origins.
Yeah. So I was going to go into a little tirade about how we're back into like TV season. You're Walking Dead's back on.
Walking Dead's back on. So, Better Call Saul came back.
Better Call Saul yesterday. Sonny is in we're missing Sonny. What time is it?
It is almost quarter to nine.
Oh, we're not missing Sonny. Great. No.
Everyone, just stay online. We're going to watch Sonny, and we'll be back in a half an hour. So
we're gonna just comment as we go along. But everything's good, man. Everything's good. You know what? Let's end the episode because it's going to be another long
French
one.
Whoa! Oh, we got a French restaurant sponsoring us.
You know, next week maybe we'll do a little bit more talking.
Yeah,
per se. We got some stories to share, things to do.
Yeah, I think I got one.
Yeah, you got one. But let's let that settle out and let the dust settle. Michael Berlow, what do you got to promote?
I will promote my page as I'm finalizing dates for the 8 minute in dating and the bat. What is it? The bat.
Bat berries.
Bat
berries. We're on the same show.
Yeah.
If you want to see the shenanigans,
the shenanigans crew is coming to you.
I was gonna say that sounds so gay. You want to see the shenanigans, boys? on the same show. Come on down. The Berries, John Sweeney Show.
Yeah, but go to facebook.com/Burl721 for all upcoming stuff and my weekly Tonight on The Walking Dead.
Yes. Wow, you ended that abrupt. I didn't know when the stop was. I was like, oh, yeah. Yes, and I guess I will promote. I want to promote a friend of the cast, actually. I'm going to promote a friend.
Really?
Rayla Bloom, who was on the show long, long, long time ago. Her real name is Pamela Ray. She just got a lot of attention for an article she did on living with Tourette's and being a comedian at the same time, and it got kind of picked up by a couple of different things. So if you go check out Pamela Ray on Facebook, that's who I'm going to promote today.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to talk about myself tonight. Other than that, I guess that's it, man. Keep the wind at your back. Life is funny. Laugh at it. And follow us on Twitter. Leave a review. Do all that fun shit.
I guess we'll be back next week. Yeah, I wish I could go to bed, but I had all those samples from the coffee guy, man.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. But I would... Again, big thanks to our guest tonight.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by Sanka.
Trevor Thomas. Adrian Mattioli.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I get it right, Kevin Sinnott.
That's correct.
Adios, guys.
See ya. And the way things are, I'll bet they never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil. No tea. Or tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice, 'cause the planters down in Santa's all say no.